All right, looks like we've got a hot mic. Good morning, welcome. It is 10:01 a.m. Thursday, January 18th, 2024. This is the time set for the public hearing on the proposed adoption of new rules 1 through 3 and the amendment of ARM 4239-104, 115, 401, 405, 409, 413, and 4239-415 pertaining to the implementation of House Bills 128, 903, and 948 from the 2023 legislature and revising requirements applicable to chemical infused product and mechanical manufacturers of marijuana. My name is Todd Olson, and I've been designated by the Director of the Department of Revenue to preside over and to conduct this hearing. If you haven't already done so, please sign in on the attendee register, which is located at the counter table area towards the back of the room. Here with us representing the Department's Cannabis Control Division is Legal Counsel Courtney Cosgrove, who will be presenting information and explaining the Department's position regarding the proposed rulemaking. Also with us here in front are members of the Cannabis Control Division. If everybody is ready, I will formally open this administrative rules hearing and dispense with some required business. The Montana Administrative Procedures Act requires me to read the following notice of function of Administrative Rule Review Committee. Notice of function of Administrative Rule Review Committee, interim committees in the Environmental Quality Council. Administrative Rule Review is a function of interim committees in the Environmental Quality Council, or EQC. These interim committees and the EQC have administrative rule review, program evaluation, and monitoring functions for the executive branch agencies and the entities attached to agencies for administrative purposes. The Economic Affairs Interim Committee has oversight with regard to rule changes proposed by the Department of Revenue's Cannabis Control Division. The interim committees and the EQC have authority to make recommendations to an agency regarding the adoption, amendment, or repeal of a rule, or to request that an agency prepare a statement of estimated economic impact of a proposal. They may also poll members of the legislature to determine if a proposed rule is consistent with the intent of the legislature, or during a legislative session introduce a bill repealing a rule or directing an agency to adopt or amend a rule, a joint resolution recommending that the agency adopt, amend, or repeal a rule. The interim committee and the EQC welcome comments and invite members of the public to appear before them or to send written statements in order to bring to their attention any difficulties with the existing or the proposed rules. The mailing address is P.O. Box 201-706, Helena, Montana 59620-1706. The Department of Revenue maintains a list of interested persons who wish to receive notices of the Department's rulemaking actions. If you would like to be added to the list, you can sign up here today with me, sign up online at www.mtrevenue.gov, or you can email me in care of the department. My email address is Todd, which is todd.olson@mt.gov. The department published this notice of public hearing on this proposed rulemaking as MAR Notice Number 42-1072 in the 2023 Montana Administrative Register, Issue Number 24, dated December 22, 2023, at page 1817. The department notified all interested parties of record. At this hearing, any interested person may submit data views or arguments orally or in writing. If you have written comments, you may hand them to me, you may mail them to me, care of the Department of Revenue, or you may email them to me. The department's mailing address is Department of Revenue, P.O. Box 7701, Helena, Montana 59604. Again, my email address is todd.olson@mt.gov. The comment period for this proposed rulemaking remains open through 5 p.m. on January 22, 2024. This hearing is being recorded. For those providing comment, please speak into the nearest microphone. Actually, the one that we have for the public today is located on the left side of the auditorium. And please identify yourself and whom it is that you represent, if applicable, at the beginning of your statements. Please confine your statement to the proposed rulemaking. Again, if you're reading from a prepared statement, it would be helpful for the record if you were to provide me with a copy of that upon your completion. If you prefer, you can also refer to yourself as proponent, opponent, or, you know, you just may provide general testimony about the proposed rulemaking. The purpose of this hearing is to receive public comment on the proposed rulemaking. This is not a contested case proceeding. Ms. Cosgrove and the other members of the Cannabis Control Division are in attendance today on behalf of the department to listen to your comments or your feedback. The department will take all oral and written comments, including recommendations for any rule changes, into consideration prior to finalizing the proposed rulemaking, and we will formally respond to those in the final adoption notice, which is provided in 24305 Montana Code annotated. Ms. Cosgrove will open with an overview of the proposed rulemaking. I will then invite commenters to come down and provide comments to that microphone. Courtney, if you'd like to come on up, you can start with the department's position statement.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. My name is Courtney Cosgrove. I'm counsel for the Cannabis Control Division. Actually, recognize everyone here, so it's nice to see some familiar faces. This rule package, we're generally referring to it as our implementation package or a cleanup package. This is to formalize changes through that were enacted through House Bills 128, 903, and 948. I am going to walk through these a little bit. I'm not going to go point by point, but we have received some early written comment and heard some comments yesterday at a legislative economic affairs interim committee meeting. So I am going to just discuss where we've already heard comments and try to address those preemptively. So the first three rules are new rules, but I think you'll find that there's really not much new of substance there. What we did was take the existing 4239401, which was a general manufacturing rule, and we carved it up into manufacturing specific rule types. So there may be an additional SOP that is required in these rules depending on the manufacturing that you do, but generally it's just trying to reorganize and provide clarity if you only do one of these manufacturing types. There is no fee for designating on your application which manufacturing type you are doing, and your facility will not be counted as two facilities for licensing purposes. If you check that you do mechanical and chemical, we're still going to look at your tier level. It's not going to be two $5,000 manufacturing licensing fees. The first amendment is to 4239104 concerning fees. You'll see that we did have a strike through for the marijuana dispensary license fee of $5,000. We did that because of the uncertainty with the Granite Peak litigation. Now that that has been resolved and the state is enjoined from imposing those new fees, you'll probably see that we removed that strike through. On the next page, we are proposing additional manufacturing tiers. We did this in response to comments from certain members of industry that the overage formula calculation was just, it didn't provide much certainty, and it was hard for businesses to plan when they didn't know after a year. We look back, we do that analysis, and some of them are seeing staggering manufacturing fees, and so we tried to do this to build certainty into it and to just build off of the tiers that the legislature already enacted. We also are proposing a new fee of $1,000 for applications to change or update controlling beneficial owners, financial interest holders, sources of funding, or other business organization changes. These are oftentimes very labor-intensive applications to process. This is not a matter of making sure someone is a resident. Oftentimes we have to review articles of incorporation, articles of organization, buy-sell agreements, merger agreements. We need to verify what a licensee is submitting matches what they've told the Secretary of State. Oftentimes there are return for correction letters and some back and forth between the department and the licensee. So in that regard, we feel that the $1,000 fine is fair and appropriate. The next change is to 4239115, just removing the background check requirement for workers, which has already been in effect. So we're formalizing that here, except for lab workers who still need to undergo criminal background checks. Again, 4239401, our previous manufacturing license rule, you'll see we just struck that through and then put it into the appropriate new rule. Again, not much new there. I do want to touch on, because we have received some questions on, I am on page 1826 there at the top, and I am looking at what is now sub 11. And we have added that, I'll read the full subparagraph. A marijuana manufacturer licensee and an employee of a marijuana manufacturer licensee may only transport marijuana and marijuana products that are in the licensee's seed to sale tracking system inventory. So that is additional language, but that is how we have been interpreting and enforcing this rule. So essentially, if you do not have a transporter license, you can only move product if it's in your inventory, meaning you can't go pick up product from another licensee and bring it back, because that's going to be in their inventory until it is checked in at yours. And you will see that change in all of the license type rules. Again, we just feel like that is clarifying language. Next, I'm going to touch on 4239405. I'm at the bottom of page 1827. We did add that this log must be updated weekly. Previously, this was a daily requirement. 4239-2038 requires daily reconciliation. So this log of pesticides would fall under that, but we carved it out and made it weekly in an attempt to make it less burdensome. The marijuana dispensary license rule didn't change much. That new sub 7, that was existing language in the manufacturing rule. Manufacturers can't manufacture these products, so we're just clarifying that also dispensaries can't sell these types of products. We've added a requirement for an SOP if your dispensary does deli style, just wanting to make sure that you're using safe handling techniques. And we added a provision that you should not be maintaining any product in your dispensary that has not already received a test passed status. And of course, you can't sell any products that don't have a test passed status. The final amendments, real substantive changes, were to the transporter rule. We did build in a variance between what is like actually transported versus what is indicated on the transport manifest, so you can still accept that if there is a bit of a variance. I understand perhaps there'll be an argument for a greater variance, and we look forward to public comment on that. And then finally, a change to the combined use license, just to adopt the changes I think that were in House Bill 128 with respect to where combined use licensees can operate. Again, we really appreciate you being here today. We take this process very seriously. We have demonstrated that we listen and that we give thoughtful consideration to your comments, and we make changes where we are able and where it is appropriate. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, Courtney. I guess at this time we can open the hearing to receive public comment, testimony. As you can tell, the room has changed a bit from the last time that we held some administrative rule hearings in here, so the podium has kind of shifted. We had to bring in kind of a standalone PA system, so what we've got here at my right on the left-hand side of the room is a microphone, and even though the stand itself is a little bit on the shorter side for those who are taller than I, the mic will be able to pick it up. So it is a very sensitive omnidirectional mic. So feel free to come on up and make your comments, and we will proceed from there. So I would entertain anybody to come on up and present some comment. Mr. Peterson, good morning.
Need a thing to set my stuff on here.
I know. I kind of felt the same way.
All right. Thanks, everybody, and nice snowy day outside. It's good to see some people made it here. I just live a few blocks away, so it's no big deal to me, but I know some of you drove through. through the storm. So we have significant concerns about 1072 that we expressed yesterday to Economic Affairs Interim Committee. If you were there, you're going to hear these comments again. We'd like to start with 1072 and talk about the tiers. 42, 39, 104, that area there. If you participated in 2023's Interim Economic Affairs Committee meetings, 22, 23, then you remember the origins of this fee. A certain senator wanted to, quote unquote, level the playing field for small producers. I spoke to said senator offline. The real reason this was passed is because some certain senator had a problem with a certain large manufacturer and wanted to stick it to them. You know, the claim that this would somehow help small manufacturers is, it was just an excuse in order to put this action out there to punish people that had larger businesses. Seeing how the stated intent of this additional $1,000 fee per liter was indeed to level the playing field, and we have seen through evidence that it did not, in fact, achieve that in any way, shape, or form. I think we need to go back to what the intent of what this was. It does not achieve that. Quite the opposite. What it's done is increased cost, fixed cost, for small operators. The truth is that manufacturing is changing so substantially, and the rules are becoming so onerous and the fees are so high that most of the small producers are moving away from manufacturing, and they're moving towards outsourcing these manufacturing duties to other entities. There are several entities now that are processing other people's biomass into distillate, into other products. Perhaps they're infusing other products with distillate, etc. But the opposite effect of what the intended effect of this is what has resulted. And so the fact that we're codifying that into tiers does not offer any relief to my members. We've spoken about this extensively. You know, it's kind of the situation where, is this better than the other? Well, you know, one piece of trash is not necessarily better than another piece of trash. And ultimately, when you are punishing businesses because they've achieved economies of scale or become more efficient, this is a retroact. I mean, it's a punishment for these businesses for succeeding. And so we don't want this codified. We don't need these tiers. Two tiers would be adequate, small producer, large producer. We don't need these dollars to implement the program. I think it's going to be very hard if someone brings suit for the department to justify how so many more liters equals $20,000 worth of additional oversight. You know, it's these processes are not like a grow. You know, it becomes more expansive. There's so many more plants. You know, these things are concentrated down, and one machine that can produce half of the amount as the other, you know, they still take up the same footprint. There's still the same amount of inspection necessary. So let's get rid of this. Let's make two tiers, and let's reduce these fees substantially because they're not necessary. We don't want to invite any more lawsuits by creating these things that are unnecessary, like the compounding dispensary fees. The judge made it very clear that it's not necessary to fund the program, then it's superfluous. We don't need it. So we'd like to see this reduced substantially and or struck completely, this $1,000 fee. This never went through the legislature. This was introduced in the Economic Affairs Interim Committee and then put into law. And the department has all the power to create new tiers, and we appreciate that. This is a case where it would be more true to the purpose of what this is to eliminate it, now that we've seen that it did not achieve a reduction in cost for small operators, and it did not level any playing field for them. In fact, it just increased their cost, it increased everyone's cost. It's trickle down because most folks are using these larger manufacturers instead of trying to do it themselves. So we'd like to see that, like I said, eliminated entirely or brought down to two tiers, small and large. 42, 39, 104 also includes the $1,000 fee for paperwork. This is an excessive amount of money to charge for paperwork changes, It is difficult enough for us to secure financing. You're charging me a $1,000 fee to talk about the financing that I've gotten, is ultimately what this is going to result in. If you have a $5 million business, maybe this is not a big deal, but the majority of our dispensaries in Montana are small operations. $1,000 is a chunk of their net profit. I know, because I talk to these operators constantly. You know, their insurance prices go up every year. Fixed costs are increasing. These costs don't need to increase here. We've got a lot of costs that are already baked into the industry. Increasing costs for operators should be off the table. We're 2 years into this program, yet every time a rule comes out, there's more fees, more cost. Is this the way it's going to continue perpetually? Every time we look at a rule, we should expect another $1,000 fee added on for something, you know, that we generally have no control over. We do not control what the legislature determines to be the criterion in which you do research on these folks. And if the legislature's not willing to fund you to do your jobs, don't come to us asking for the money. I mean, plain and simple. We are not an ATM to make up the difference between what the legislature is providing for this program and what you think the program needs to survive. The fact is, if you need more money for it, then, you know, we appreciate that. We all need more money for our businesses, too. We're not the cash machine to make up that difference. And that's what we feel like right now. Everything is going up. Every single fee that we've been associated with is going up. You reduce one thing one place, but we don't see that as going anywhere near equal to the fees that you're asking for. 4239405, marijuana cultivator licenses. We appreciate the fact it's being moved from daily to weekly for monthly. You don't need to be overseeing our pesticides weekly. That's unrealistic for you to maintain. It adds an additional burden to your department. The fact that you don't have the current staff to meet those needs means that we need to start looking for these efficiencies. This is a perfect place to start. Monthly review of pesticides would be extremely adequate. 4239413, transportation. We are extremely concerned about this. When deliveries happen on a wholesale manner, who's there to receive it? Who takes it there? The reality is that most of the time the people that receive it are low-level budtender employees who sign a form and they put it in a corner and they wait for the person who's at the dispensary to deal with it. Because you don't know when they're going to be there because there's traffic. I mean, we're talking about a state that's the size, you know, of many countries. And when a delivery is coming from Billings, there are traffic and weather considerations. If people have multiple stops, you know, they may be doing some sales at a place they stop previously. They may engage in conversations about their product that last an hour or more. The bartender's life may be boring, and so they want to talk to this person about what's going on in Billings. Those are real-life considerations. And so I understand that this rule is trying to make sure that we don't have discrepancies that may result in product being diverted. But, I mean, guys, like a variance of 0.9 grams for a pound? I mean, very frequently, like when a manager comes into the dispensary and they review these products, they're the one that's going to go through that weighing process. You're putting the burden on these low-level employees and potentially on delivery companies. Because, you know, we see a lot of third-party transport these days. And so suddenly the third-party transporter is going to be responsible for making sure that everything's correct at the point of sale with the customer. I mean, some of these places that receive deliveries are getting 1,000 of a product. And if they have to sit there and count every single one of these things, then we're talking about an additional hour or more on the delivery person's schedule, throws that off, you know, because they got to sit there and wait until somebody completes the check on every one of these items. And then what happens when they say, sorry, I'm missing one vape, I can't take this 50,000 unit delivery? You know, that's absurd. We need something like a 10% variance on all of this at minimum. I mean, these are these are complex transactions, and they take a long time. And what you're talking about doing is creating a police force out of these low-level bud tenders. You know, and who's to say they're not going to miscount? You know, who's to say that they have the wherewithal, you know, to go through this process? And so suddenly I've got to have a manager or somebody of authority there every single time a delivery comes in. That complicates things substantially. Some people have deliveries coming in every single day. And like I said, you don't know when it's going to happen because there's a lot of variance in that. And so we need to be realistic about these things. Where's the problem here? I mean, ultimately, when a rule comes forward, you know, the responsibility lies with us, particularly with the department, to describe why. So why is this rule so important? And why is this variance so unforgivable? I mean, what we're going to see is like 50% rejection rate with variances this small. And that's absurd. And who's going to pay for that gas? You know, because somebody makes a delivery from Billings to Helena and they're missing 5 vapes, and suddenly they got to take that whole package back. Like, I don't know the process for rejecting a package, but it's probably a lot more complex than putting it together and sending it. And so suddenly we're adding all this burden to these delivery companies that have no business participating in the transaction in this way. They pick the thing up, they deliver it, they roll out. Like the UPS guy. You know, is it the UPS guy's responsibility to look inside the box of makeup you get at home and say, everything's here? No. You have time, you have reasonable expectation of an amount of time that you can review this stuff, and then you contact the person who sent it to you in the first place. I mean, I don't understand what the demand on this is so strong that you have to write a new rule for it. I don't experience these problems. I haven't met dispensary owners or workers or wholesalers that have experienced problems related to this. So, I mean, there's no need for this, generally speaking. So, you know, we don't want it at all. But if you do, you know, hand this down to us, you got to give us some kind of reasonable variance. You got to give us reasonable timetables. You need to dictate who these people are that have to participate in these transactions. Because what you're doing inadvertently is creating a whole new regime of wholesale delivery and acceptance. And it's changing things dramatically. And I don't know that you've analyzed it at that level and said, what does this do to these businesses? What kind of responsibility does this add to these delivery companies? Because these delivery people, you know, they got a manifest and it says what they got, but they got 15 of these things at once. You know? I mean, this is not their role. It shouldn't be a part of their role. If the delivery's not complete, then, you know, the guy should be able to send another one next week to fulfill the delivery, to make sure that it is complete instead of rejecting it. I mean, there's just no reason that you'd have to reject this. If 75% of the order is correct, I'm going to keep 75% of it. Very frequently, when something comes into any of these stores of our members, they need it that day. They could care less if there's 5 missing, because they need to put that product out on the shelf. When you're in eastern Montana, you've been waiting on a delivery for a week, and there's barely anybody that'll provide that service in the first place, this becomes a huge burden for these businesses, and it could put them out of business in some scenarios. You know, this is going to empower the black market unintentionally if this thing is adopted as it's written. We don't need it. We'd appreciate it if it were just removed entirely. If it stands in place, this thing's got to be clarified in like 45 different ways. And it's an administrative burden. Why are we going to add any burden to any of you about this that's not a problem? Why do we need more oversight over something that's not a problem? This is the kind of additional work that costs more money, that necessitates going back to the legislature, and this is the kind of stuff that we need to start eliminating. This is superfluous. I mean, I just can't even imagine. I've never heard anybody talk about this as a problem. And suddenly we've got this new rule related to it. And if something's not broke, then why in the hell are we fixing it? And why are we creating new duties for the department, new duties for people who have no business carrying out these oversight duties like the delivery companies? You know, generally speaking, we want to have a good relationship with the regulators. We want to have a reasonable expectation of goodwill. 99% of cannabis entrepreneurs that I've interacted with are good people. They have no ill will and intent. As a matter of fact, I mean, every one of us sits around paranoid constantly about violating the rules because we don't want to lose our licenses. And, you know, a lot of these rules seem aimed at destroying an intent that doesn't exist, policing an intent that doesn't exist, and that hasn't manifested itself anywhere in the program. And I appreciate that there may be an anticipation of a potential problem, but we don't write rules for things that we imagine might happen. We write rules for things that happen and that become a problem and that we know are a problem and take up staff time and create complications. And we create rules to streamline those processes, hopefully. Not creating rules that will create new processes that are more complicated, that add additional burden, that create duties for people, again, that are not in the role to fulfill those duties. So I think that's all I've got for today. I'm available for questions anytime. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. All right. Is there anybody else that would like to provide comment?
To go.
Antoinette, you drove in the snow from Three Forks, so.
It wasn't snowy. Hell, it was snowy. Roads were clear.
Let's go. We'll strike that from the record.
All the rivers are full of ice, though.
All right. I also request a podium to put my stuff on. You're going to see my nervous twitches. My name is Antoinette Leininger, L-I-N-I-N-G-E-R, representing Sacred Sun Farms, and I just want to thank everyone for being here, and I want to go through the bill kind of piecemeal a little bit, and then, and thank you, Todd, for organizing everything.
Sure.
I didn't know what you did. It's a lot, so I appreciate you. Can I grab my phone really fast? So we'll start with the first thing that I was really kind of piqued my interest when I looked it up was the Red Tape Relief Initiative. And I was like, what is this? And it is expired as of December, but since you mentioned it, I just want to make sure and read it for everyone because it's cool. The purpose, and this is from Governor Gioponte, the purpose is the council shall expand upon its work as described in the executive order, which is, Montana's strong economic growth is essential to ensuring our residents, our children, are able to find good paying jobs and raise their families in Montana, whereas excessive government regulation can impose high compliance costs, inhibit job growth, delay or deter expansion of existing businesses, impede private sector investment, and increase prices paid by consumers for goods and services. Whereas Montana citizens, farmers, ranchers, and business owners are required to spend too much time and resources understanding and complying with the regulations set forth in the administrative rules of Montana, which exceed 4.7 million words and would require an average reader 263 hours or almost 7 weeks to read. Whereas it is in the best interest of Montana citizens and businesses to reduce the regulatory burdens imposed on them whenever and wherever possible, while continuing to protect public health and consumer safety. Whereas Executive Order 1-2021 established the Red Tape Relief Advisory Council to conduct a comprehensive review and reform of the regulations in every state agency. So that's cool, and hopefully he renews it. So
he did.
He did.
He did.
Great. So it's still in effect. What a cool little piece of paper. I suggest that we filter everything through this executive order from the governor, because really it's about clarity, simplicity, application, and effectiveness, and we all want that. And I hope, because that means we all work less hard and have more ease. Doesn't have to be easy, but ease is a goal. So my first thing was in the manufacturer licenses and fused products. I wanted to use this opportunity to request an addition, and it would be a site license for manufacturing license as dispensaries or site. You have a dispensary license, and then you get issued site licenses under that main dispensary license. Cultivation is the same. The manufacturing license is separated into every location needs its own manufacturing license, and they're also different, as you addressed in this bill, with some being just a kitchen. We have a packaging one that's strictly for packaging, but one license to sort of like rule them all, sort of like cultivation dispensaries are currently. So that would be a good addition to, it just simplify things, and we wouldn't have to pay a $5,000 manufacturing license fee for a packaging department. So then I'm at New Rule 2, Marijuana Manufacturing License Infused Products, and it is number 4, A and B. So it would be B in particular. Oh wait, let's jump up to A, 3A. It says that we cannot state that we put Rice Krispies in our Rice Krispie containing edible, but we need to put it on the ingredients list. So I just feel like some clarification, like we can state it in the ingredients, just to avoid any misconstruing of just clarity. And then if we go to 4, it's A, an employee illness policy that requires employees to report to the person in charge information about their health and activities as they relate to diseases that are transmissible through food. And I'm not sure, but if I have AIDS, I am not required in HIV to tell my employer that I have AIDS. It's my personal health information, and requiring people to divulge health information that has no effect on their performance on the job, or doesn't require an accommodation, seems really illegal. And and I guess overall, we just want to be treated like a normal business. More rules don't make things more safe, and I'll kind of address that in the end. But let's not make this super complicated. Let's keep it as simple as possible so that it can be enforced, so that we can function, so that it is clear, everything that we're supposed to do. So the Rule 3, manufacturing marijuana license mechanical manufacturing. Number 2, marijuana manufacturer license must have current written SOPs at the license premise available for inspection that details the procedures for the safe handling, maintenance, and storage of a hydraulic press. My dad owned a machinist shop for 50 years, and he had lathes that could rip your arms off, 10-ton hydraulic presses. He didn't have to have SOPs on how to store it. The thing doesn't move, and ours are pretty heavy, though they're not very big. And I don't know how slow they move, but if you're going to hurt yourself with it, it's going to be intentional, because it moves so slow. So I think this is arduous, and it's not like it's a huge deal, but it's like these little tiny kind of like micromanaging feeling additions to the ruling that they don't make anything safer or better. It's just more things that we can get fined on during our inspections. I'm going to skip to the tiering, and I won't spend too much time on it because Pepper really addressed it well. I do ask for the sites for manufacturing licenses, and then this is just complicated. I like two to three tiers. I was thinking 10K for 0 to 15 pounds, or 10 to 15 pounds, 15 for 15 to 30. If it's over 20, it's like a set price, and we don't break it down into so many different categories. It's an average throughout the year, so I mean, if you're right at 15 pounds, I mean, it's too much. The application fee to change location of a license premise, $2,500. I want all of these additional application fees to have an opportunity during our relicensing period to do it free of charge. That way there's not additional paperwork, you're still, you know, making sure everything matches, and that would be like just an opportunity to do it, so we don't have to pay a lot of money to do it. Like, I split my Glendive dispensary into an A, B, an A and a B suite so that we could do something with the back end of it that's not marijuana, and it cost me $2,500, or maybe it's $1,000 now, and when you want to up it to change the license, and it's like, well, is it really worth it? Because $1,000 is a lot of money. I mean, we're not rolling in it. We give a lot of money away. It's a big number. $1,000 is a big number, especially when you just compile them. And the same with the beneficial owners. I mean, it cost me $100 to create a business in the Secretary of State or less, and $1,000 for you to do your paperwork. But I just ask, like, at licensing time, we get the opportunity to do these things without that additional fine fee. And then to the transfer, this would be page 10 under marijuana manufacturing license general. This change, I feel, is unclear. It's A10A. For each, it's a marijuana manufacturing license must have current written SOPs at the licensed premises and available for inspection for the following. For each final form product, the equipment, ingredients, and manufacturing process used, which shall be kept confidential by the department. B, how all, that A one. Why don't we just keep the sentence you crossed out and just put product instead of marijuana? Or it needs a lot of clarity, because I'm not really understanding why this is necessary or how it's different from what is already stated. And then we'll jump down to E and F. So, and I was kind of like, what, this is crazy. But then I was like, oh, it's for the lab, which is, you know, something. But like, an SOP, it just seems like another little thing that we have to add to our huge safety binders. The use of fire extinguishers, chemical spill kits, and the applicable safety concern. So fire extinguishers, they have a user's manual, pictures right on them. I just don't understand why it's necessary. We hire professionals to work our labs because we are under the full understanding that is the most dangerous place to work, and they're also really highly regulated by the fire department, and he is strict, and he's to the point, and he's clear, and he does a good job of keeping us all safe. Precautions to ensure that employees with illness or open lesions be excluded from any operations which may be expected to result in contamination of marijuana products until their condition is corrected. I'm not really sure what this is for or why it's necessary. Most people don't want sick people working with their team, because then the whole team gets sick. And what is an open lesion? Is it I have a cut on my hand, or is it like I have herpes, or what is it? I don't understand. It needs more clarity, or just needs to be gotten rid of, because I don't know what has caused this to be an issue. And maybe that you have some instances, but I haven't heard of any. Thank you for the weekly pesticide management. I also will suck at what Pepper said and moved monthly, and the additives also are quite arduous to be done daily. And I did talk to the metric advisor who came through and toured a lot of Montana's locations to just talk about Metric, and he said Montana was the only one that required daily closures of all Metric things, and they are implementing a thing where they, within a week, if it's at zero, it's just going to go away naturally, but that is a week, and that's what most states lie under is at a week. If your packages are at zero and they're not gone, then that's an issue, but if it's daily, that's a lot of work. I mean, people sell thousands and thousands of packages every single day, and I know you don't care how much work it is, but it's arduous, and it doesn't, what's the point? I want to, like, what is the point? Marijuana, so I'm going to go to marijuana dispensary licenses, number 7, and that's just right back to the Chex Mix and like the common product that can be construed as like being attractive to children. It says, licensee does not state or advertise to the consumer that the final marijuana-infused product contains a chemically commercially manufactured food product, except for in the ingredients. Just for clarification. And then on to the transporter part. Holy cow, this one has the most changes. Transportation of marijuana and marijuana products, marijuana transport license. Page 14. I am going to CI, the actual time of departure from the, so we have to, I love the estimated part that's being added. Pepper spent a lot of time on this, so I'm not going to beat a dead horse because I agree with what he said. So we have to put the estimated times, great, actual date, totally fine. You go to the app, and then you have to go back into your seed-to-sale tracking system and then record the actual time of departure from the originating license. I'm just wondering why. There's literally cameras everywhere. Everything's tracked. And it's received, and you know what time it's received. Why does the departure date to the exact minute matter so much? I'm curious. It seems like just overly burdensome work, and if we go to the Red Tape Act, we want clear, simple, not overly burdensome. A lot of these are overly burdensome, and just, what are they trying to solve? Number 12, accept as provided in B, which is that variance, licensing. A receiving license premise must reject a transport that contains marijuana or marijuana products that do not match the description and or quantity shipped on the transport manifest. It is in our best interest as business owners to make sure that we get all of the product that we request and that it looks and is in the state that we expect it to be. And currently, right now, which is great, we can have a whole transfer and pick an item or two that didn't meet our standards and reject it. Why can't we just stay with that? It seems like it works, and it's not the rejection of, like Pepper said, an entire transfer that could affect your business and sales for weeks to come. So I would request that it stays as is, and those are my comments on the bill. I do have a couple of things that I just wanted to talk about really far. Overall, it seems like some of these rules are just, they're almost like ways that we can get fined, like sneaky ways to get more deficiency reports, and they're expensive. They increase our licensing fee. So I wanted to say, like, a fact is the black market's growing because there's a lot of these increased fees, increased competition, and a lot of people have invested their lives into this. Therefore, they're going to do what needs to be done to save their business. So, has safety been increased? I don't know. I would love if we could measure that because we get it all the time used against us. This increases like risk to children. It's bad for communities. Like, I would like this measured. So if we're gonna say like this increases safety, like let's get some data points and actually measure it to see if our hard work is actually doing what we want it to do. I know everyone sitting here wants to feel like they're moving forward and doing a good job and like checking off the boxes and actually doing the intent, which would be safety for the consumers. So let's measure that. And you guys are really smart, and I'm sure we could brainstorm on some ideas. And that kind of brings me back to the town hall, which we addressed, we talked about.
Ms. Leininger, we just need to keep the hearing to what's actually in the rules notice, please. So, but if you'd like to send me those comments,
yes,
I'd be happy to forward those on to the division. It is just a general overview of.
Yeah, I feel like these rules are asking a lot of me, so where's my opportunity to ask for the things that I need to run a business if it's not right here when everyone's sitting in front of me?
Okay. Well, you've had 20 minutes, okay, which Mr. Peterson had as well. Okay. And so we do have some other folks. And like I say, you can certainly either send me your written comments or you can send a supplemental email or something along those lines. But just in the interest of time, it doesn't discount at all what it is that you have to say. It's just trying to expedite our
meetings would make these much faster.
It could, yes. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. I appreciate your understanding.
Don't forget your phone.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name's Shanda. This is Tamara.
Could you actually, if you haven't signed in, if you could maybe just say your name and spell it for the record?
Oh,
so
yeah,
we know actually who it is, so we can attribute your comments.
Yeah, Shanda, S-H-A-N-D-A. Tamara, T-A-M-A-R-A. Hayward, H-A-Y-W-A-R-D.
Wonderful, thank you.
I'm speaking on behalf of the transport license, 42394-13. So the first thing is number 3C, C3, the most direct route to be traveled complete to transport. That seems like it's specifically if someone's doing internal transport. It doesn't take into account third-party transport who may be servicing multiple clients. So although the one client is creating the manifest, they don't know the other stop that third-party transport is going to. And to share that information is breaching confidentiality for the clients we're servicing. So I feel maybe to add some clarification to maybe if you're using third-party transport, refer to transporter log, or maybe just, you know, strike that from it or find some other verbiage to account for those scenarios. With that kind of tying in further down with being accomplished within 72 hours, kind of touching base to what Mr. Peterson said, when you're doing transport and you're dealing with receiving personnel, some people would prefer to have management there. Management usually isn't there Saturdays and Sundays. Does this 72 hours take into account receiving times? A lot of stores, manufacturing places, don't receive after 4 o'clock. They have very strict times where they will receive packages because they want somebody of a management level to be there. So the 72 hours makes it very difficult when you're looking at a state that we all know takes quite a bit of time to travel across. When we're looking at things with construction in the summer, you're looking at things with winter services. As Mr. Peterson said, every stop comes with delays when you're there, maybe waiting for them to finish with their customers so that you can bring in the product when the store is not full. You know, there's a lot of different factors that come into play. And then being mindful when we're thinking about third-party transport is they're servicing, again, multiple clientele. So while you're may thinking they're doing one drop as an internal transport, that's not always the case. So just having some of those considerations when you're coming up with these transport laws would be really helpful when it comes to making an actual business that runs. Many other states have distribution laws where third-party transports can make an effective business plan and actually be able to utilize getting different clientele. And it just doesn't seem like this transport encompasses anything to be able to do that. So the next one, I think a lot of people already touched on number 4, the requirements of the overnight stay. I'm just a little curious, you know, how that is envisioned. So, you know, it says, A, identify the state on the transport manifest to transport. So in Metric, there is the layover feature. I don't know if you're intending to utilize that feature where you hit layover and then you would put whatever license premise is being laid over at. It kind of then falls into number 5, the transporter of the marijuana product must record it. So then are you saying they're receiving that product and creating a whole new manifest? Or is that, you know, I would just like some clarification on what is expected to happen when the product is being laid over. Are those same expectations happening for third-party transport and if someone's doing internal? And how is that being enforced? Are people being checked that they're laying over their product in a licensed facility, or is it being kept in a van parked
at their hotel?
You know, so I would just like a little clarification, you know, in that sense. Then, let's see, number 5. Number 9 through 12, all of those things that were added. I know Mr. Peterson, and I apologize, your name again?
Antoinette.
Kind of touched on some of those, but again, it puts, I thought the previous ones that were stricken, number 8 and 9, you know, the receiving license premises is responsible. I don't think it's up to the carrier to be responsible for the contents within the packaging. I would expect, you know, maybe when the carrier is picking up, like, that tow should already be locked and sealed. The manifest should be, you know, covered and checked by the distributing personnel. The carrier comes to pick it up, it's sealed, it's locked, however it needs to be, whether that's with, you know, personalized zip tags or some sort of security tape measure, however that goes about. And then we're picking that up, we're making sure that, you know, our main focus is making sure that the community is, you know, shielded or not, you know, having any encounters with product during transport, and that it's getting there safe and that it's being compliant, and then we get there and drop it and move on. So yeah, all of these new things, 9 through 12 being clarified, would be great, especially when it comes to the rejecting manifest. If I have a manifest that's rejected, but I have 5 other stops ahead of that, now what do? I tell all of these stops, no, I have to now go back here, you guys have to wait, now I have all this product, where does it get held, what happens? You know, so I think just having a little forethought on, you know, those procedures would be helpful there.
I would like to intersect here. What Pepper had said, giving some leeway time for the receiving license to account for all the products that's there. Like, we may be dropping off multiple boxes for a wholesaler, and in each box there's going to be 100 little vapes or something. And so it's going to take time to go through all of those packages. Whereas in 12A, it says that the originating license is responsible for any discrepancies and to reconcile them prior to us leaving. So are they now responsible for coming and picking up that rejected manifest because they didn't fix the discrepancies before we left? And like she said, like, if we're leaving from Missoula, we have to go to Butte, Bozeman, and end in Billings, but Butte has a rejected manifest. Do we have to turn around now and go to Missoula, drop it off, and then continue on to Billings? So putting that burden on the person who's creating the manifest in the first place, I think, can help alleviate some of those. Because there is human error counting things. There may be one or two missing and having to reject the whole entire manifest. Yeah, it's just going to cause some issues. Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to butt in.
No, I'm glad you did. I appreciate that. And so, let's see the last ones. Yeah, we're really just looking for a little bit more clarity on how the state envisions third-party transport kind of operating and happening, because it seems like a lot of this is just kind of, doesn't take into that consideration. So, you know, we've been operating for almost 2 years now strictly as a transport license. We realized that the transport license was new and just kind of created as a way to kind of alleviate having to go, you know, straight up the ladder. If someone doesn't want to transport, they can use that. But we've encountered a lot of things that we believe would benefit maybe you guys just through our experience of running this business now for the last year and a half and being one of those companies that solely does transport. So we'd be happy, you know, to chat with anyone or give, you know, any of, share our experience of what it's been like if anyone is interested.
Yeah. One more thing as well. So on where it says the actual date and estimated time of departure and arrival, and then on 5 it says that the transporter is now responsible for recording the actual time. Are we also responsible for accepting it into their inventory then, if we're recording it in metric, what time it was received? And if so, why are we responsible for accepting their inventory when they're responsible for making sure it's accurate? It seems like they should be the ones to record the actual time of arrival. I don't know, it just seems like those two things are kind of together. And then the 72-hour rule, if that is for everyone and an internal transport can hold overnight, but they're saying Butte and they don't have a licensed facility there. It says that they're allowed to use another licensed premises. So that means that they are accepting their product into a licensed premises. Is that now that licensed premises? And they can pick it up the next morning and continue on their route, but it's coming from that license. Does that make sense? I'm just gonna throw out an example. So say Lionheart.
License A, license B.
Okay, license A. License A has a store in Helena and in Missoula, but they can't make it to Missoula, so they have to hold it overnight in Butte. So, per law, they're allowed to hold it overnight at a license B. And now, is that product the license B's product? Because it's in their manifest or inventory?
This is, you're just...
But yeah, anyway, that's my question. It doesn't make sense to me. Yeah, and I think Shannon did a pretty good job covering the rest of it. However, it does say you guys are adding a transfer hub. On our T license, we currently have a transfer hub, so I'm just a little confused what you're adding and how that's going to look different. Okay, that's it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate all that you do.
No, it's tough.
Thank you, Ms. Hayward. Thank you, Ms. Hayward.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Readers, so we'll see how that goes. Kate Holewa, CHOLEWA, Montana Cannabis Industry Association. I won't repeat a lot of things. I'll just try to give input where our spin is a little bit different. But I do want to say up front, and this is shocking input, but guess what? You know, anywhere there's a fee, guess what? The business community wants it to be lower. You know, that's just how it is. And I think our organization has always been a little different in that we have the largest, we've got the smallest, we've got the mids, we've got a wide range. So our take on things is often about the success of a market and the capacity of different kinds of businesses to succeed within that market. And so those fees come into play with that. In trying to assure we have a market that attracts, I mean, some days we're gonna be national. You know, we want our market to be attractive. And that means the survival, you know, of variety. So, general comment. The tiers, the new model, which, you know, is an adapted model. We appreciate the CCD taking on reforming a clunky provision in the law. And, you know, this is, I'm going to give you our discussion because our discussion is our input. You know, at first we thought this needs to be more stratified rather than $10,000, 10-pound leaps between tiers. Why not be 5,000 and 5-pound to create a more, just a more graduated approach. And so that was a discussion that went on until the discussion went, wait, why don't we just have two or three tiers, you know? So then it went a very different way. And I personally, in the way I approach input, is not to say things without specifics and then leave it on somebody else to come up with those specifics and then come back and say, you suck, you did it again, you know? And so the two or three tiers, you know, that might be a good model, but I just also want to add that if we have two models, what that's going to be is a very inexpensive license and a very expensive license. And so people are going to come back and talk about that. So that's a consideration, you know, when we think of it in those terms. As the discussion unfolded within our organization, a lot of questions come up. I appreciate what Courtney said when she got up about the license covering several sites. There was confusion about that within our organization, and it seems like maybe in practice that may not be happening in some situations. Conversation about how M licenses get used due to their unique characteristics. And I got to tell you, it just led us to a place. This is kind of like what Antoinette was saying, but it is as input that we think we need more conversation about M licenses, how they're used, how they're structured. You know, we're 2 years into this, the recreational, you know, regulatory matrix. As I said about the advertising and committee yesterday, I think there's some items where we have to maybe go, you know, this is what got thrown at the wall, and maybe, you know, and you, that's what you have to do. And sometimes you have to adapt it, and sometimes you have to go, all right, that didn't work, you know, and you have to come back again. And we think that maybe some discussions about M licenses and production might be useful. We appreciate that you tried to adapt this rule, make no mistake. We're just wondering, can we wait another package? Can we have some conversations? And, you know, so anyways, that's our input in regard to that. Another issue, I'm not going to say anything that's already been said. I am going to say something that may seem absurd, but, you know, sometimes you have to. You know, I mean, it's something small. It's just refrigeration stickers. It's the easiest thing in the world, but we just don't want it to then get out in the field and have one inspector say, you can't stick it on that side of the package, you know, or you can't, you know. So we just, if there's going to be precision, we would rather have it up front than it turn into an issue that's, sounds ridiculous here and will sound ridiculous out there. So, and like I say, I would just bring that up because labeling just does have, seems to have been jagged, you know, in its implementation and practice. You appreciate what the transporters were saying, and of course greater variance is always helpful. And I just want to follow up that just, you know, human error is real. It's almost like people in this industry have to operate with more precision than the Wuhan lab, you know, and so that's staff time, that's money on top of fees, and so anyway, I guess that's it. The rest will be in writing, and thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Kate. I think that about does it, unless... Sir, you next to Pepper there, if you had any comment or... Okay, just an observer. Thank you for being here. Appreciate that. All righty then. Just as a bit of a recap, the department does have the comment period open for this rulemaking through 5 p.m. next Monday, which is the 22nd of January. Memory serves me correct. Yes, 5 o'clock p.m. January 22nd. My email address, those again, if you need to send something that way, is Todd, my first name, T-O-D-D, olson@mt.gov. And last but not least, even though we do have a recording of this, I would really appreciate it for those of you that came in a little bit after the beginning, if you could sign in on the attendee register, which is on the back table, kind of behind that partition wall. With that, I guess if there's nothing else to bring to our attention, I'll close the hearing. Thank you for being here.